Chapter 12. Captain Bourdamo did not have a will of his own. In the most trivial sense, this mattered little. He could lift his arm when he wished to, he could eat and drink, he could take his las rifle apart and put it back together again. He could express controversial views in the barracks and consider how he would spend his month's wages when the credits hit his regimental account. And yet, in a deeper sense, there was nothing. His entire life, his entire purpose, was slave to a single principle. That principle had been implanted in him before he had even become a person, back when his entire existence was accounted for by a few cells floating in a soup of nutrients. He was perfectly aware of this. All of the exemplars were. The entire regiment was composed of men and women from the Imperium who had, from the moment of conception, been destined for its service. They all knew, now that they were adults, that this was the case. None of them minded. This, too, was a consequence of their unique introduction to the world. If he had been of a more inquiring disposition, Captain Bourdamo might have been inclined to investigate the precise circumstances of this peculiar body of fighting souls. He might have looked into the records of the hundreds of small clinics scattered across a dozen independent provinces of many different Terran kingdoms. Some facilities had been within the boundaries of the Imperium, some beyond its reach. All had been totally secret. All were now destroyed. The only remnant were his kindred, baseline humans, physically varied, with only a marginal, subtle tinkering of their otherwise unremarkable genetic makeup to set them apart from the greater mass of mongrel mankind. In practical terms, the outcome of this was simple. All of them had been drawn, one by one, by roads, crooked and hard to trace, to service in the recruiting offices in New Delhi and Agra and Sark, and thence to action within the regiment of Castellan Exemplars proper. Thereafter, they were loyal, diligent, and competent. They were taught, in time, the circumstances of their selection, in order that there might be no unpleasant revelations later on. This never discomforted them. Most importantly of all, they became aware of their supreme inbuilt allegiance to humanity. Not to the Emperor's version of humanity, but the true version, taught by the Prophet. Every time they saluted the Raptor Imperialis, they would say the right words and present the outward appearance of rectitude. But in truth, every one of them would be internally transmuting the vocalized "for him" to a silent "for her." For the Prophet was, it must be understood, in a very real sense, their mother. She had moulded and cajoled their DNA with all the skill and dexterity for which she was renowned throughout the Imperium. No special abilities had been conferred beyond a generalized nimbus of good health and mental acuteness, for they had been created to be a contingency, a hedge against uncertain times. Once the palace was founded and the walls began to rise, they naturally found themselves stationed in its many garrisons in ever greater numbers. Why should they not have been? They were good troops, stable, dependable. The exemplars lived up to their name and never gave cause for concern. Until now. The Prophet had finally given them the order they had been waiting for their whole lives, and they swung into action without a second thought. Every exemplar stationed within the palace reached for his or her gun, checked the power pack and spare, adjusted their flak jacket and peaked helm, and unfussily left their station. Bourdamo himself headed down from the Nexus towards the main security portals to the dungeon. He jogged, his las gun held two-handed and primed to fire. As he went, 16 of his unit joined him, running from their various stations and falling silently into position. He knew that all over the palace, hundreds of others would be doing the same thing. He briefly imagined that mustering, as if seen from above, by eyes that could somehow peer through the layers of rockcrete, tiny points of dark blue coalescing and reforming like some giant amorphous organism, an infection within the body that would soon reach the vital organs. His unit reached an intersection and swung right, now making directly for the turbo lifts down to the dungeon itself. As they did so, a 6-strong squad of seneschals challenged them.
Halt! Stage of...
They were the only words their sergeant managed to get out before 16 lasbeams scythed cleanly through him and his troops. A spatter of blood and fried flesh, a thud and a bounce of limbs, and the exemplars ran right through the mess, never breaking stride. Bordamo heard the first of the charges going off and felt the floor shudder underfoot. That meant the perimeter breakers had launched their assault on the inner core. Everything depended on speed now. There were thousands of guards within the near-infinite warrens of the underground kingdom, and they would respond once they had worked out what was going on and who was behind it. Only while the palace's many sentinels were still confused and reeling would this thing remain possible. They piled into the turbo lift and hit the drop control. The cage doors slammed closed, and the unit fell down the shaft, rattling fast. Once at the next level down, they spilled out again and into a large muster hall. The space was already filling with exemplars, more than 100 of them. The bloodied bodies of seneschals lay in clumps, as well as greater numbers of menials. Bordamo's deputies, both lieutenants in regimental colours, were waiting as expected.
"Resistance neutralised 3 levels down," reported the first of them,
a woman with valorous service pins on her flak-armoured breastplate.
"Comms disabled. Suppression actions already underway."
Bordamo nodded and made his way to the next dropshaft. A wounded seneschal lifted his head from the floor, and Bordamo absently shot him through his broken helm.
"And the Prophet? Moving into destiny."
An alarm went off somewhere down below, swelling up the many pits and transit tubes, followed by the whine and crack of more lasfire impacting.
"Then we have no time to lose."
He made for the third drop cage, hanging precariously over the shaft on taut cables. The unit could carry 6, and there were 12 more of the steel carcasses open and ready for the descent. Most of the remaining exemplars did likewise, leaving only a few dozen to strap incendiaries to their waists and take up position at the chamber's various entrance portals. Bordamo hit the cable release and the cage lurched from its shackles. As always, everyone inside staggered, waiting for the swinging deck to level out and the lowering chains to kick into their payout. This time, though, something caught and the cage dropped only a few metres before snagging on something and slamming into the shaft's inner wall. The lumens flickered, briefly illuminating the oil-soaked metal innards of the pit edge. Bordamo looked up towards the rectangle of uncertain light overhead, trying to gauge what had halted them. It took a moment for his mind to register what his eyes told him.
"Bring it down,"
he ordered, and every exemplar in the cage shouldered their las rifles, aiming upwards. Hard white las beams fizzed up the shaft, one after the other, sending bright light shooting up the inner walls. Volley after volley hit home, flashing and spinning as the concentrated spears impacted and refracted from their one massive target. Amidst all that dazzling display, it became hard to pick out just what they were aiming at. A jumping, shifting mess of reflections and distortions, but they had already seen enough to know what was reeling them in. A single soul, a lone warrior, clad in that hateful gold, and pulling on the main support chain, hand over hand, hauling up the tons of steel cage with its 6 occupants, like a fisherman spooling in a line. The las fire barely made it falter. The beams scorched and bounced from that impenetrable hide, leaving long black lines, but little else. Steadily, agonizingly, the golden helm drew closer, until the exemplars were firing at point-blank range, their las rifles locked in terror. They were thrown to one side, then the other, slammed violently against the cage's innards, and yanked upwards. Bordamo's stomach lurched, and he suddenly felt weightless, his feet leaving the cage floor and his las rifle loosening in his hands. As his head smacked hard into one of the big iron bars, he saw a blur of gold close to his face, swiftly replaced by a whistling sound and the rip of hot air across his body. The golden devil had thrown the cage across the muster hall, slinging it one-handed and sending it careening into a heavy buttress pillar. The impact was sickening. Bordamo was cracked against the skidding bars, his armor doused in a hail of sparks. The sliding cage spun to a halt, and he felt the hot slick of blood against his armor. His left arm was shot through with pain, his vision was cloudy, but he pushed himself around and tried to aim at what he knew was coming for him. The cage was a mess, a ruined tangle of dented iron, draped with the heavy bodies of stunned and broken exemplars. Bordamo had the slurred impression of the golden monster coming for him, loping across the ground between them like some vast machine wolf. He opened fire again, more out of reflex than hope, but the next thing he knew, a cold gauntlet had closed around his neck, crushing him back to the ground. He looked up to see a mask of Auramite barely an arm's length from his own helm. He saw twin lenses flaring red in the dark and a web of astrological engravings amid the scorch lines of the lasfire. He had never been so close to one before. At this range, the artistry was almost unbearably beautiful, and the stink of incense was overpowering.
"Amma Astarte," came the voice of the mask, a deep, refined tone that gave away its owner's lack of exertion. "Where is she?"
Out of the corner of his eye, Bordamo could see other custodians, maybe two of them, slaughtering their way across the chamber, churning through the remainder of his troops with a cool, casual expertise. They moved astonishingly fast, dancing effortlessly around the panicked lasfire before crunching their blades into bone and flesh. Already one had launched himself down the dropshaft, others would no doubt follow.
"Too late!"
Bordamo rasped, feeling his neck muscles contract.
"She is already in place!"
The custodian hesitated for a moment, as if considering whether anything more could be gleaned. Then he squeezed, a short, decisive, inward throttle of armoured fingers. Bordamo never even felt the end, just a sudden cold rush, and then blackness. Simona stood up, unlocking his blade as he strode back towards the shafts.
"We waited too long,"
he muttered to himself, breaking into a run.
"Always we are too cautious."
As he went, the shadow world of tactical perception swayed and updated around him, a multi-layered gauze of target ghosts and shot vectors. He could see the marked signals clustering and breaking, every one of them an exemplar soldier, moving across the bowels of the Senatorum and down towards the dungeon's secret chambers. Whole levels were now on fire, blasted into slag by incendiaries, and now all but impassable. The infiltrators had done their job well, sowing confusion, generating false targets, sending the palace guardians rushing to stamp out 100 different insurrections. He felt reproach stir within him, a rare emotion, but one of the few he was still capable of experiencing. He had never understood why this had been allowed to fester. They had watched, guarded, observed, but never acted. He remembered Valdor's instruction right at the start. Find a weakness, a slip in resolve. Commendable, perhaps, but dangerous. Now the fruits of that decision were ripening. Simona's glimpse analysed the movements running across his inner tactical display, the shifts, the pattern of the fighting. Future states spiralled away from him like spectres, picked out across his cortical feed in a glowing filigree of false light. He reached the lip of the dropshaft, now slung with broken cabling and the tumbling fragments of the central chain pulley.
"To the repositories!"
he voxed to his command group, pulling them all from their killing and directing them towards the lowest levels of the Hidden Kingdom.
"With all haste now, time is against us!"
Then he flung himself over the edge, plummeting fast, feeling the hot air whip up around him and make his cloak snap, before he caught one of the remaining chains to break his fall. The atmosphere heated rapidly, fueled by the furnace kindled at the roots of the mountain. He looked down and saw flames surging up the shaft, red and angry. His brothers were doing the same as him, racing down towards the deepest catacombs, dropping like stones through the winding pits. There was no going back now. The Order's lethargy had to be accounted for, even at the cost of such extravagant danger. Simonas gauged the distance, unclenched his fists, and plunged deeper down through the inferno. Valdor did not hurry. He went on foot, travelling alone down from the tower and into the maze of streets below. Buffets of grey snow smacked and slid from his armour as he went, running down the Aramite in glistening rivulets. The sky was now black and turgid, roiling and churning like a thick-stirred slick of bitumen. The howl of the gale never let up, but shot freezing spears through every exposed nook, whipping up filth and debris and hurling it against the reeling walls. Civilians caught out in the storm ran for cover where they could, slamming heavy portals behind them once they gained sanctuary. The many mobilized soldiers had no choice but to endure it, heading in bedraggled lines to their designated defense points. Those mechanized transports, still out of position, labored through the murk, their tracks spinning and their engines thudding. Valdor paid them no attention, but made his way calmly down through the terraced urban levels towards his destination. The flurries of airborne filth gave him a kind of anonymity during the passage. In normal times, the populace would have been shrinking back from him in reverence and fear, or maybe even creeping towards his cloak hem to dare indulgence. As it was, even his splendour was obscured, swaddling him in a whine of wind tatters and allowing him to move unseen. It was almost as if the entire climatic spectacle had been orchestrated for that very purpose. He, though, still saw everything clearly. His armour sensors were untroubled by even the wildest storms, and his auger range was undiminished. As he neared the outskirts of the gigantic Lionsgate fortifications, he ran his projected tactical gaze over the army gathered in the wasteland beyond, counting their strength and comparing it to predictions. The statistics, as ever with him, were within expected parameters. The renegades out in the open far outnumbered those shivering on the walls, and no doubt exceeded them in lethal capacity many times over. That such an army had been assembled at all was a significant achievement, and Valdor found himself impressed once again with High Lord Candlewire. It was not easy to keep major operations secret on Terra, with its shifting allegiances and fractured politics. She had done it, though, just as thoroughly as she had done everything else. He reached the looming bastion fortress just to the south of the massive gateway itself, its upper reaches hidden by the driving sleet, but its heavy foundations a dark, glossy grey. He climbed the long stair that led towards the bastion's inner ramparts. Troops of a dozen different units were taking their final positions, hauling las cannons and battening down the slamming access hatches. As Valdor reached the final uncovered courtyard before the gate's main transit canyon, a senior officer in the colours of the fortress's 12th High Watch noticed him at last. Caught in the middle of his duties, the man performed a fractionally amusing double take, froze for a second, then raced over clumsily to salute.
"My lord,"
he shouted through the flying hail.
"Thank the Emperor you're here."
Valdor kept on walking.
"Continue preparations, Commander," he said. "No enemy must pass the threshold."
The man jogged to keep up with him.
"By your will," he stammered. But if I... There are more out there than we can... Will you join... Will the custodians be..."
"Maintain your positions," Valdor said, his mind already moving on to what would come next.
His tactical readout was crowded now.
I will pass through the portal alone. It will be sealed behind me. None shall leave by it. None shall enter.
The commander hesitated again. No doubt he was considering another query, perhaps even a protest, but nothing came over the comm. Commendably, after a few moments more of confusion, he recovered himself and raced off to enact the order. By then, Valdor was reaching the gate itself. When complete, the structure before him would be truly immense, a colossal archway of coal-black stone and adamantium bands, buttressed and reinforced and surmounted by gun towers until it rose nearly to the level of the spire tops beyond. Even now, in its semi-complete gestation, it was still a vast construction, its echoing innards exposed to the elements and resounding to the howl of the storm. Whole battalions of mechanized walkers were intended to be housed within these hangars one day. Far above him, ranks of empty cannon chassis gaped outwards, ready to receive the internal mechanisms that would allow them to hurl ordnance halfway across the plateau beyond. The place was being built for another age. No war machines yet existed that would remotely fit into its vast alcoves, and the entire palace itself did not contain nearly enough troops to fill out the halls of this one bastion. In anticipation of future abundance, the interior now shuddered with emptiness. As Valdor made his progress towards the heavy shielded external doors, his footfalls resounded high into the yawning vaults above. Ahead of him, great doors slowly swung open, sliding along grooved tracks 5 meters wide, gradually exposing the wilds beyond. The portal gaped more than 30 meters high and swiftly filled with the flotsam of the storm's wrath. Valdor walked out into it alone. The night roared back at him. As he strode across the blasted tundra, the gates closed behind him and the high walls of the palace steadily fell into the snow clouds. In the darkness ahead, 10,000 lumens glowed amid driving filth. The high ridge beyond the plateau was occupied for its entire length, clustered with infantry and heavy armour strung out in a long ragged line. Valdor's augurs detected the ranges of myriad weaponry all primed to be loosed, some crude and ancient, much else capable of dealing out tremendous damage. Above all, he isolated the familiar profiles of those he had fought alongside for so many decades of conquest, as singular as fingerprints amid the rabble of mercenaries and unenhanced troopers around them. By now, the only souls who truly mattered were making their way down from the high ground to meet him. They had formed an embassy of sorts, 2 dozen thunder warriors limping along in their old chipped armour, plus a diminutive figure in an overstuffed climate suit. And then there was Ushatan, of course, almost as resplendent now as he had been in the past. He had diminished very little, like a granite crag thrust out into a wearing sea, battered by erosion, but still defiant. He alone still managed to walk without the twinge of visible pain. His dark gold plate still carried a mite of its old lustre, and the campaign sigils were still just about visible under all the dried bloodstains. The power armour gouted wisps of smoke from a boxy reactor pack, and his creaking servos were audible even over the wind. Valdor met them in the scouring emptiness between the two armies, his storm-racked city behind him, the gathered hordes dead ahead. They stood immobile, all of them, and for a while the sleet roared emptily around them. "Death will come for you, Ushatan, one way or another," Valdor said at last. "You do not need to seek it here." The Thunder Legion Primarch laughed. It was a sour sound, made machine hard by his failing augmetics.
"Oh, I do, Constantine, of course I do. But this is arrogance, even by your standards. Where are your golden sword slaves? Where are your guns?"
Ushatan was a head shorter than Valdor, though built more heavily. The Captain General seemed almost untouched by the storm, whereas the Primarch appeared to be merging out of its heart, battered by it, fueled by its inchoate wrath. The remainder of the Thunder Warriors glowered in the slush haze, their armor mechanisms clunking and hissing. They were a ragtag automata of destruction, assembled from rust and held together only by their fierce hatreds. "You have demands," Valdor said, equable as ever. Kandawire moved forwards, unsteady in the gale. "You know what this is about," she said, her voice cracking through its hard-pressed augmeter. "Crimes against the state. The slaughter of loyal forces in order to keep your grip on the Imperial war machine. By the authority of my office, you must now relinquish command of this city and open the gates. You will be tried in fair and open court, your fate determined by the Emperor when he returns." Valdor nodded.
"I see," he said. "And you did not think to serve this summons when we spoke last?"
"Would you have obeyed it?"
"Of course not."
Ushatan laughed again.
"That's why we're here," he growled. "Every fighting soul with a grievance or a thirst for revenge, and there are a lot of those. You couldn't erase us all. Not quite perfect. That must really kill you."
Ice-spiked rain swilled across Valdor's golden helm, sluicing like tears down the ornate swashes. His weapon, the immense spear, remained deactivated and sullen in the gloom.
"The High Lord is acting only as she sees fit," he said, speaking to Ushatan. "But you have served with the Emperor himself. You must see how futile this is."
Ushatan shrugged, sending cascades of rusty runoff shedding from his dented pauldrons.
"More futile than dying from my bad blood? I don't think so. I'd like to go out seeing my blade sticking from your spine, Constantine. That would be a good way to go."
"Only if you resist," interjected Kandawire warily.
"Yes, of course. Only if you resist," echoed Ushatan sardonically. "You can walk back in with us now, and we can finish this without a shot being fired. But I don't think you'll be doing that, will you?"
"You know I cannot."
"Do not be a fool," Kandawire blurted. "The city is undermanned. Your order is scattered by the war. Resistance now will only cause bloodshed."
"With respect, High Lord, you brought the bloodshed. The deaths this night will be on your conscience."
"Conscience," muttered Ushatan, amused. "So you can remember what it's like to have one of those, can you?"
"Stand aside, Captain General," insisted Kandawire. "Tell them to open the gates. Your trial will be in accordance with the Lex, and if you are innocent, then you have nothing to fear."
"Innocent, guilty," Valdor said wearily. "I did not think to hear such facile terms from a High Lord."
He rounded on Kandawire then, just a minute shift of stance, but the power in the gesture was briefly naked.
"We are the architects of the species' future. No crime could be judged as too heinous if it secured that. No virtue could be forgiven if it hindered it. The Lex is a tool for the control of the psychologically free. It is an expression of his will and nothing more. You have been a fool to think it more than that. You could have served long and honorably as its protector, and now your fate is chained to theirs."
Kandawire held her ground, just, but Ushatan's huge frame, undaunted, shook with laughter.
"Now then, be nice. She has a point. You're a lying, murdering bastard, and we were all supposed to be cracking down on them. You could give her what she wants, and you won't have to watch your city burn."
"Walk away," Valdor told him. This is the only chance you will ever have.
We both know that's not true.
I will take no pleasure in seeing you slain.
You take no pleasure in anything. That's because you're a ghoul.
But I will end you, Ushatan. Here, if I have to. The Primarch laughed out loud, throwing his cloak back and sweeping his arm out wide across the empty plateau.
Alone?
He asked incredulously.
You'll take us all on alone? By the gods, you become ever more insufferable.
You cannot make a stand here, Captain General, added Kandawar, an edge of desperation in her voice now. Despite all you've tried, all the weapons you've brought, we know your numbers are too few. You told me yourself there are no new armies. All that's left is you standing here now, and that is not enough. For a moment, just in the space between breaths, Valdor said nothing. In that instant, he seemed indeed beaten, or maybe resigned, a sliver of pale gold thrust into the heart of the infinite ink-dark night.
You did not listen to me, High Lord, he said, finally kindling his great spear. I told you there were no new generals.
A halo of silver-gold light leapt out from its disruptor, dazzling as forked lightning.
But if you had heeded the lesson I gave you, then you would by now know the real truth, that there are many more armies, armies more deadly and more numerous than any created before.
Ushatan moved to strike, his own blade spitting blood-red plasma, and yet something stayed his hand. Something stayed the hand of every Thunder Warrior. Amid the roar and thunder of the world's fury, something new could suddenly be detected. Something familiar and yet unfamiliar. Something horrifically dragged out of the past and yet even more horrifically indicative of the future. There was a whine, a grind of mechanics, a surge of something massive and coordinated out amid the sensor-baffling chaos of the maelstrom.
You should feel honored, Valdor said, hefting the spear effortlessly into its killing position. You are present at their very first engagement.
And out in the driving muck of the ice storm, where the snow and hail screamed and the frozen earth cracked, 10,000 helm lenses suddenly ignited, then began to advance.